From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
Some of the most beautiful and intricate creatures in the garden are not plants at all. A diversity of lichens are showing off right now on tree bark and branches, on stones, on unpainted garden furniture, and even soil. More visible since many of the garden's plants have quieted down visually for their dormant season. Let's go on a virtual lichen walk with lichenologist Jessica Allen, co-author of a new book on the subject. More in a moment, but first, this message.
Underwriting support by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, supplying landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners with new ideas and high-quality flower bulbs for fall planting. Plant tulips, plant daffodils, plant Color Blends this fall. Available at colorblends.com.
Jessica Allen is an assistant professor of integrative plant biology at Eastern Washington University, and before that she pursued her PhD at New York Botanical Garden in a joint program with the City University of New York. At NYBG, she met lichenologist James Lendemer, and years later, when she conceived of creating the new book, Urban Lichens, A Field Guide for Northeastern North America, she invited him to collaborate, as they have continued to do on lichen research work over the years. Welcome, Jesse, and thank you for being here today.
Thank you, Margaret, and thank you so much for the invitation. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, well, we had so much fun doing the recent New York Times column on lichens, which people seem to really enjoy, so I couldn't wait to talk to you again and ask you more questions.
Yes, absolutely. I thought the article turned out really well, and I was absolutely delighted with the comments, too. I think a lot of people shared their memories of lichens, their how they visualize lichens and interact with them. And it was just a delight to be able to read those comments.
Yeah. So before we get started, I'll say that with the transcript of the show over on awaytogarden.com, we'll have a giveaway of the new book from Yale University Press. So I suspect every conversation you have about lichens, every class you teach or walk you lead or lecture you give or paper you write, you always have to begin with the answer to this question: what's a lichen?
Yes, absolutely. They're so mysterious, right? There are these organisms that we see around us, but their underlying nature isn't necessarily obvious just from looking at them macroscopically. And if we were to take, you know, a microscopic look there, what we'd find is that they're fungi and algae growing together. So they're sort of a quintessential symbiosis. Some people think of them as corals that live on the land. So there's this really obligate, intimate interaction between the fungus and then some sort of photosynthesizing partner. So whether that's a green alga or a cyanobacterium or a combination of green algae and cyanobacterium with the fungus. And that kind of is really the cornerstone of the symbiosis. But there's a lot more going on in there than just those two organisms. We can really think of lichens as miniature ecosystems in and of themselves as well. So in addition to those, the fungi, the algae, there are other fungi in there. There are tons of bacteria. There are tardigrades, which are water bears, and nematodes, these tiny worms. And so really, it's kind of a microcosm in and of itself.
So you studied to become a botanist, a plant biologist. Why at one point did you not say, oh, this genus of plants or these trees, or how did lichen capture your heart?
Yeah, that's a great question. It actually started when I was taking introductory biology, and we went through, you know, for the whole year, we went through all of these chapters in this book, and we talked about all of these different organisms and molecular processes. And then the only chapter that we skipped was the one on fungi. So I went back and read it, and I said, these are the coolest organisms. And I was lucky enough to be at a university where we actually had a whole quarter-long class on mycology, and the professor was wonderful. And I really fell in love with fungi. I think they're fascinating. They are a bit cryptic, so there's a lot of mystery there. There's a lot that we don't understand about them still. And then of all the fungi, I found lichens the most beautiful, and I really just fell in love. And so throughout my education and also my research, I've worked on plants, I've studied plants, but really my heart has also always been with the lichens.
Mm. Interesting. I didn't know that, and that that's how it came about. And I think that when I spoke to you and James Lendemer, your longtime colleague, for the New York Times article, mm-hmm. you both explained to me that fungi are really overlooked in conservation as well, aren't they? Not, you know, you were just telling a story about how mm-hmm. you discovered them and they were almost overlooked in the literature, so to speak, but they're not really recognized in conservation efforts as widely as they should be, are they?
Absolutely. For a long time, they've really just been completely excluded from conservation, you know, our typical conservation efforts, which tend to focus on sort of larger animals and on plants, on vascular plants especially. And we can see this, you know, when we look at, for instance, the Endangered Species Act, you know, there are thousands of plants and animals protected by the ESA, but there are only two fungi. They're both lichens, and they both occur in the southeastern United States. So that's the rock gnome lichen and the perforate cladonia lichen in Florida. And there has been some recent, actually, some really recent positive news on this front, though. Lichens and other fungi are gaining a lot of global attention in conservation. The first international fungal conservation organization just formed, the Fungal Conservation Committee, as part of the International Union for the Conservation of Nature. The IUCN has really been embracing fungi in their documents recently. We have this flora, funga, fauna movement going on, this sort of 3Fs movement, which has really been led by Juliana Furci, who's an incredible fungal conservationist. And so there is a movement in this direction. I think we're really seeing some positive outcomes for fungal conservation globally, really.
So in the case of lichens, you know, people might say, well, but it just looks like a piece of chewing gum that fell on the ground or on a log or some splat of paint on a rock or whatever. So why should I care about those? Why do we need? So what's their role in the bigger picture environmentally and so forth? What are they doing?
Yeah. So, you know, lichens perform tons of different ecosystem services. They interact with a lot of animals, so many animals eat lichens, even large mammals, so like caribou eat a lot of lichens. They really fundamentally rely on lichens as one of their major food sources, but even animals like deer and moose use lichens, especially as a winter forage. Many birds use them as nesting materials, as do smaller mammals like flying squirrels, both as nesting materials and as food. And then if we continue to sort of scale down, many invertebrates use them as camouflage and again as a food source. And then if we sort of scale up to the ecosystem level processes, you know, they're fixing carbon from the air, right? And they're also fixing nitrogen. And they can be in many systems a really sort of one of the most important nitrogen inputs to the soil in some forested systems.
Oh.
So they're, you know, both on this really large scale of the movement of elements sort of through these systems globally, and on these smaller scales and these really in all of these interactions with animals.
Huh. And I know when we did the story together, we talked about, you know, here it was garden cleanup time when we were speaking and, you know, people are raking and they're finding maybe a branch twig with lichen on it and, you know, but it's not junk. It's, as you called it, a little packet of fertilizer, of potential fertilizer, right? I mean, there's, as it decomposes, it's also full of goodies for the ecosystem in that way.
Yes, absolutely. And so, you know, you can think of that in the context of composting, if you're thinking of gardening. And then, you know, I would encourage folks, if you're ever, you know, out in the forest, walking around, and you see that that same process happening with these fallen branches and lichens on there, and you will see them sort of decomposing and becoming part of the soil. And that nitrogen input is an especially important part of what lichens bring to that picture.
Yeah. How long do they live? You know, it's not, it doesn't seem like it's really like, you know, youth, adolescence, adulthood, and senescence. It doesn't seem like that. like other organisms that I know better.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. You know, those really distinct life stages are not necessarily observable with lichens. They sort of play by their own rules in many, many ways. And their lifespans vary quite a bit. So we have an example of, for instance, if we look at lichens that live on leaves, so what we call foliaculous lichens in the tropics, those lichens' entire lifespans are tied to the length of time that that leaf is attached to the plant. So we see a lifespan of a year, 2 years maybe. And even in the United States, we have lichens that live on, for instance, rhododendron leaves. And those leaves last for about 2 years. So that's the whole lifespan for the lichen. And then on the other, you know, drastic farther end of the extreme lifespans, we see, for instance, like really small lichens that live in the Arctic that grow slowly. They have really, you know, short growing seasons. These lichens, I don't know that we necessarily even have a number on how long they could live, certainly well over 100 years. So that we have this broad range, but I would say for the most part, like the lichens, if you're in a sort of temperate forest that you see growing on bark and they're kind of leafy, we're talking maybe like, you know, 10 to 50 years-ish. So they tend to be fairly long-lived organisms most of the time.
Yeah. I mentioned in the introduction that, you know, I feel like especially at fall, in the fall, I'm in a snowy area, so before the snow falls and covers some of them, but especially in fall and then again in early spring, when I'm not distracted visually by, you know, the garden, quote unquote, or leaves on the trees or whatever, I'm really tuned into the lichens most of all. And do they ever go dormant? Do they have a dormant time, or are they doing their thing? The alga in the fungus, is it photosynthesizing all the time, or, you know, all year round, or how does that work?
Yeah, that's a great question. So their growing season, I would say, is much longer than many, many vascular plants. And they have this, well, I would say one of their superpowers is that they can completely desiccate and sort of go dormant and then rehydrate. And within an hour, they're like back at it doing their thing. And then they can desiccate again. Oh. So their water content is at equilibrium with the environment. And they can be, you know, photosynthetically active at much lower temperatures than you would suspect. So not all lichens, but many lichens can really be, you know, have a kind of a low rate of photosynthesis, getting even close to freezing temperatures. So if you think about in the fall, for instance, and actually the fall and the spring are great times for lichens to grow because all of the leaves are out of the way. So they get a larger share of the sun coming in onto their, onto them. And so when they're hydrated and the sun is up and it's above freezing, they're probably photosynthesizing, right? And then they can also be active at night. They're not necessarily photosynthesizing, but there are some like physiological activities that can be going on as long as it's warm enough and wet enough for them to be doing their thing. So I really, you know, I think about lichens growing and being active more on I sort of envision this like these conditions and when they might be present over the course of any given 24-hour period, right? Warm enough right. light, and enough water for them to be active.
Okay. So, you know, there are like maybe I think something like 25,000 species known and hundreds more discovered each year, something like that. And and I think in the book, Urban Lichens, A Field Guide for Northeastern North America, which would be appropriate for anyone in the Northeast, not just in a city, but throughout, I think, and down to maybe like Washington or something. You cover, I don't know, maybe 60 or so in very detailed portraits. So if I'm going to go out and I'm going to look around my garden and I'm going to discover lots of different ones, to narrow down what they might be. I might have your guide because I'm in the right region, or a different guide if I'm elsewhere. It helps to first decide which type of lichen, which group they're in. And there's three main groups, right? And that sort of narrows the first way of narrowing down the choices. Is that how we start?
Yes, absolutely. So if you, you know, go out into your garden looking for lichens, I would say my first tip is that they're best enjoyed with a little bit of magnification. So if you have a magnifying glass or a jeweler's loupe or a hand lens, definitely take that with you. And then certainly figuring out which growth form the lichen that you're looking at is a great place to start. So we have three main growth forms: foliose lichens, which are sort of leaf-like. They have a top surface and a bottom surface. If you try to, like, you know, maybe pick at them a little bit and see if they come off of whatever they're growing on, you should be able to get them away from their substrate a bit. Then you might also find crustose lichens, which are completely and intimately attached to whatever they're growing on. Some of them are a little bit scuzzier looking, not to have too much of a negative connotation.
Those are the ones that could be mistaken for paint splatter, I think, sometimes, huh?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Definitely. So they tend to be very strongly attached to whatever they're growing on. And then the third growth form are fruticose lichens. So they're more shrubby. They're really 3D. They'll be growing up off of whatever they're on, either whether that's sort of bark or if it's the ground. And we have things like old man's beard in that group, or reindeer lichens, or British soldier lichens, species like this.
It's so fun if you take the little lens, even an inexpensive hand lens, and you get right, like say it's on rock. And I did this in taking some pictures for our article, and you get right down at like the rock surface level and you look at this like community of different lichen on one surface, and you see those fruticose ones, those shrubby ones standing up. It's like a miniature world. And then the crustose ones sort of really adhering to the rock, and in between some foliose ones. And it's like, oh my goodness, I had no idea. Because, you know, if you're just zooming around doing your garden chores, you think, oh, there's some lichen over there, but you don't really look. And so your point is very well taken. Take that lens and look at it from all angles and just see how intricate and how incredible they are.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is one of the things that I find really captures people's imaginations the most is, you know, we sort of take it for granted that they're there. They're sort of a splash of color. But then when you look, even with, again, you know, you don't need anything fancy, just a little magnification. And it's this whole world, this whole beautiful world that's been, you know, it's around us all the time and we tend to rush past it. But it is an invitation to slow down and take a closer look.
Yeah. And as far as what they're doing, they're not rooting into or feeding off like the tree that they're on, if they're on tree bark or on a branch or whatever. They're not parasites, I guess is the word I want to say. They're not, right? They're not, I guess maybe that's one of the words I want to say, but they're not in some way harming the other living thing or the rock for that matter. They may speed the breaking down of the rock into a component of soil, but they're not doing that rapidly. They're not doing damage, right? They're
mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So the lichens that grow on bark are just using that, you know, as a place to live, to access the sun. And, you know, bark tends to be have a little bit of moisture holding ability. So it's just a really nice place for them to live. The same on rocks, on soil. They are involved in, you know, this process of rock weathering and eventually soil formation. But like you said, this process takes a long time. So sort of in our lifespan in our gardens, we wouldn't necessarily see any of our sort of rocks really breaking down quickly because right. of lichens.
And we don't have to, not only do we not have to, but we must not scrape them off the tree. You know what I mean? They're not a disease. They're not an infestation. They're not mm-hmm. something bad on the bark of the tree. It's it's fine. It's great. I mean, absolutely. I think it's to celebrate, not to worry about.
I agree. And, you know, if you're seeing lichens on your trees, yes, they're not harming the trees at all. And indeed, if, you know, lichens are really, you know, very sensitive to air pollution, they're sensitive indicators of air quality, of environmental quality. And so if you have a ton of lichens on your tree, that's probably a good sign. And so I agree, absolutely celebrate that.
Yeah. So I wanted in the last 3, 4, 5 minutes, I want to talk about kind of the book a little more and, you know, kind of how that came about. You were doing leading walks, I think, in the city maybe, and doing what are called bio blitzes, participating in bio blitzes, where all the species in a given area of different kinds are surveyed, assessed, and and that kind of led, I think, to your thinking, gosh, we need a guidebook that shows the lichens of this region. Is that a fair assessment?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. It, you know, it really came out of engaging with people in New York City, specifically with various groups of sort of students and naturalists, and being explicitly asked every single time, this was, you know, what's next? Like, this was fantastic. I loved learning more about lichens and taking a closer look. And I want to keep going with this. What resource do you recommend? And there are some great field guides out there, but nothing for urban areas. And lichens in urban areas tend to look slightly different. You know, the cityscape is a bit of a stressful environment. And so it kind of changes their morphology in really specific ways. And so it's a kind of challenging to use field guides that are designed for lichens occurring in natural areas in a city. And so that, it, you know, I started writing this explicitly because of that, you know, that request. And that, I think it turned out pretty well. So we have an introduction to lichens, sort of all of the background that you need to know to get going and identifying lichens, appreciating lichens. There are detailed descriptions and notes on 60 species with photographs. There's a key, and then there's also an illustrated glossary at the end. So right. With this in hand, you should be able to go out and start lichenizing.
And really, again, not just in New York City, but throughout the East, because I mean, I'm here a couple of hours, few hours north of the city. And so still in the East, but not in an urban setting. And it's working for me, you know, to be able to, I'm seeing familiar ones in here. And does the city have more like 100 species, or how many species do you think there are in New York City, for instance, just by?
Yeah. So when I last tabulated that number a few years ago, we were up to 106 species.
Wow.
Having been reported from New York City since the late 1960s. And since then, a few additional species have been reported. I think we're looking at about 120 species within the 5 boroughs at this point.
Huh. Wow. And you told me before that you, even like once you had to go do a walk or a something on at the big landfill, the big capped landfill at Staten Island, Fresh Kills. And you were like, there's not going to be anything here. And what did you find? I mean, so it's even in preposterous places, they are there. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. That was a really that was actually a really fun event. That was one of the Macaulay Honors College bio blitzes. So I was out there with my colleague, Natalie Howe, and a number of undergraduate honors students. And yes, exactly. I said, oh my gosh, what are we going to find here? And then we actually found quite a few species, including one that was growing on a brick, a discarded brick. There were a number of species that we actually hadn't seen in any other parts of the city. So there are surprises to be found everywhere. I think we are still just getting a sense of what is possible, like what lichens can possibly live, even in these really dense urban areas.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Jessica Allen, thank you so much. And thank you for Urban Lichens, a field guide for Northeastern North America, and just for being patiently telling us more about these incredible creatures. So everybody should go out and do a lichen walk and take that hand lens, as she was explaining. And we're going to have the giveaway, as I said, with the transcript. And I hope I'll talk to you again soon.
Great. Thank you so much, Margaret.
You're welcome.
It was a pleasure to be on the show.
Thank you.
Underwriting support by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulb, supplying landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners with new ideas and high-quality flower bulbs for fall planting. Plant tulips, plant daffodils, plant Color Blends this fall. Available at colorblends.com.
And thanks to all of you for listening. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Apple Podcasts or on Stitcher or on Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or on Facebook and on Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening and lichen hunting meantime.
Away to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.